I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Early voting in Maryland's primary election begins in 7 weeks and 2 days. Today, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates. Delegate Mary Washington and Senator Joan Carter Conway are my guests. They are competing for the Democratic nomination for the District 43 Senate seat that Senator Conway has held for the past 21 years. Delegate Washington has represented the district in the Maryland House for the past 8 years. This race is one of three Maryland Senate races in which longtime incumbents are being challenged by younger legislators in the same party who currently serve in the House. After today's conversation with the candidates, Maryland Matters co-founder Josh Kurtz joins me to talk about some of the other key state races on the ballot in June. Senator Joan Carter Conway and Delegate Mary Washington coming up when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon. I'm Tom Hall. It is indeed time for Midday. Glad you are with us. A little later in our show today, Josh Kurtz will join me. He's the editor and co-founder of Maryland Matters, a website which covers Maryland government and politics. We'll be sizing up some of the key races for the state Senate and the House of Delegates that will be on the primary ballot in June. But first, we focus on one of those key races as we continue our series of conversations with the candidates. My guests here in Studio A are two lawmakers running for the Senate seat in the 43rd District, the incumbent, Senator Joan Carter Conway, and Delegate Mary Washington. The district includes Charles Village, Waverly, Northwood, Coldstream, Homestead Montebello, and Penn Lucie. Senator Joan Carter Conway has served as a member of the Maryland Senate representing the 43rd District since 1997. In 2007, she became the first African-American woman to be appointed chair of a Maryland Senate Standing Committee, the Senate Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs Committee, of which she's been a member for 21 years. She is a former member of the Baltimore City Council. Senator Conway is 67 years old. She lives in Hillen with her husband, Vernon. They are the parents of a grown son and the grandparents of four. Delegate Mary Washington has represented District 43 in the House of Delegates since 2010. She serves on the Ways and Means Committee. She's the House Chair of the Joint Committee on Homelessness, and she is a member of the Joint Committee on Children, Youth, and Families, the Regional Revitalization Task Force, and the Tax Credit Evaluation Committee. Delegate Washington is 55 years old. She lives in Edner Gardner's with her partner, Professor Jody Kelber-Kay, and their two sons. We are streaming our conversation on the WIP our Facebook page. If you have questions for the candidates, we will try to take your calls at 410-662-8780, our email midday at wipr.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at midday WIPR, and we will give priority to listeners who live in the 43rd District. So, Senator, Delegate, welcome to you both. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Tom.
So, Delegate Washington, let me begin with you and sort of get right to what many consider the sort of elephant in the room in this race. Senator Conway has seniority. She is the chair of a very important and influential committee. How are the voters of District 43 best served by having a person who would enter the Senate, should you be elected, with none of that seniority and without that committee chairmanship?
Absolutely. And thank you so much for the question. It's great for us to start that off right away. As you said, for 8 years, I've served in the Maryland House of Delegates. And before that, I was president of community associations. I serve on a number of boards. I have experience at being a legislator. And also, I've been in leadership positions. When I really did think about this, and believe me, I wouldn't run for the Senate seat if I did not believe that there was a gap. And often I would say that it doesn't matter really the chair that you're in, it's what you do with it. And so when I look around my district and I look at the gap between the housing challenges that we have, I look around my district and I see the communities that are really wanting to engage with their elected officials, I don't see that type of engagement. I also very much believe that every 4 years, the legislators, the constituents, sorry, of the 43rd district have to decide who's best suited for the challenges facing the next 4 years. And with all of the changes, our needs to be more engaged with other communities, to be engaged with other counties, to address issues around funding formulas, to address issues that are really very different than what we've done in the past, I believe that I'm best suited to do that. My background in sociology, my background in working in communities and developing partnerships, I've had a tremendous amount of success. So I actually don't accept that proposition that I simply will go into the Senate and have no influence and have no ability to make change. In fact, it's very clear that I have been able to do that without any support from our leadership, passing legislation to end youth homelessness, working forward and moving forward on ending the practice of taking people's homes for unpaid water bills, making sure that pregnant women are not shackled when they are incarcerated. There are a number of things, and additionally, getting an additional $250,000 a year for senior centers. So I've had a tremendous amount of success. And what I look forward to doing is amplifying that success by being one of the 47 people that are making decisions and also are engaging and advocating for Baltimore City, but also being very focused on the 43rd district. Okay. My sole responsibility will be our district. I won't have any other allegiances.
And Senator Conway, I mean, you know, Politics 101, the handbook does say that if you've got seniority, you've got a committee chair in your pocket, that is something of advantage to the 43rd district. But is that assumption incorrect? I mean, your response to Delegate Washington.
Well, no, I would have to agree that having a chairmanship is definitely an advantage. I mean, we get to see a lot of bills. You have relationships with the House and the Senate. You know all of the chairs. I also have relationships with those individuals in the House, the six chairs there, and the Speaker. So there is an advantage, and it's not quite as easy as individuals think that it is to shepherd and get your bills out of particular committees. And it was interesting that the good delegate mentioned the homeless and youth bill, because I had a discussion with, and I was quite aware that was Delegate Washington's bill. And I had spoken with the advocates. I know many of them. Many of them I had sent them. They had scholarships. I know their parents. And they had come to talk to me. So I was very interested in the bill. So the bill did pass. It did pass. And I asked the chairman for the bill. And he said that the advocates were present. But it was my understanding that it was my delegate's bill. It was when the bill came to the floor, I was not aware of the fact until I looked at the title of the bill that it was a senator's bill. So the senator cross-filed the bill. But at any rate, it benefited those individuals that it needed to benefit. And, you know, I always thought that we had a very tight and cooperative delegation. But obviously, that has not been the case. And if you talk to Delegate Maggie McIntosh, who is the chair of the Appropriations Committee at this time, she used to be Environmental Matters. But no, it makes a difference. And I think that just on the basis that the 43rd district has been consistently blessed because they have two chairs. There's no other district in the state, no other jurisdiction that has two chairs. So it does make a difference. You know, I've been there. I've did that. I've sat on the back seat. And, you know, I am very passionate about many issues, and especially those issues related to racial, ethnic, and gender equality. And consistently, there is problematic. And, you know, as a new kid on the block, when you sit in the back seat of the chamber, the issue then becomes, you know, you have all of the guys, very few women. So it becomes very difficult. You have to maintain, broker those types of relationships. But no, as chair, you have a wide discretion in terms of the bills that pass or won't pass. And interesting enough, you know, leadership is conferred on the chairs by leadership, the president and the Speaker of the House. But first of all, you have to get there. And that part of getting there has been consistently conferred upon me by the voters in my district. And mm-hmm. I do appreciate their cooperation. I appreciate their support and confidence in me as their legislature. So many people really don't understand the actual process. And you have to understand the process.
Delegate Washington?
If I may, that's what this election is actually about. This election is about the end of politics as usual. It's about privileging the desires and needs of our constituents, not special interests. It's about not complacency. And I raise this with all due respect because of the Sun article that just came out recently where Delegate Conway, Senator Conway was quoted as saying, you know, she's the public servant and she's the voice of the people. But she also said she could care less about my bills. And, you know, I was really sort of very disheartened because to use that language, that I could care less, is something that really strikes a chord at why we need a change. I was alarmed that someone who was elected to public service would ever say I could care less, and especially in reference to legislation that was in the best interests of those we represent. And so, for example, one of the other bills was about pediatric stroke, preventing youth homelessness, as we said, protecting our churches and our small businesses from losing their homes, and even removing the definition of slavery and slaveholder from the Maryland Constitution. So this really isn't about, so I'm not raising this because it's about my legislation or someone else's. It's really about what we're doing best for people. And in other words, regardless of politics and who's involved, an elected official should always care about legislation no matter who it is. So we should care about these things. I do care about these things. And because I care about them, because whoever put the bill cared about it. And as state senator, I will absolutely care about these issues. And why? Because my constituents do.
And let me just interject. My response was, and I do not control what the media writes, and I haven't even read it, and if the good delegate said that he wrote, I could care less. The question to me was that Senator Delegate Washington has consistently accused you of holding her bills. I told him, do you understand how busy it is? Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs have more bills than anybody in the legislature. He said, well, were you holding her bills? I said, I don't even know what her bills were. So I could really care less about holding Delegate Washington's bills. That was my statement. And Delegate, if you're offended, then rightfully so, you should be offended, because that was not my response. They did not write the total question that they asked me. They said that you had consistently accused me of holding your bills. I don't know what they wrote, because I don't read the articles, but it is totally inaccurate, because the question in reference to holding, I said I could care less about holding Delegate Washington's bills. She said, well, they had accused you, and Delegate Washington consistently said, I said, I don't have Delegate Washington's bills. And I guess if this was stipulated and if that was the statement, it must have come from Luke Broadwater, because that's the person who consistently asked me and said that Delegate Washington was accusing me of holding her bills.
All right. Well, let's see
and
if that's
just
the case.
Simply, for the record, I never said that. I do, in fact, understand that every piece of legislation that passes out of the House does not necessarily make it to a vote. And that is also a problem, that the House of Delegates passes some very good progressive legislation and bills keep sitting, they just simply sit in a drawer. It's not just my bills. So I wasn't just talking about my bills. I was saying in general issues that are very important to a number of people, just because of a dynamic of a politics of politics as usual, of where the leadership determines what can come up to vote. So again, what my concern and what my alarm was just simply that anyone would say in any context at all that we don't care. And so I'm happy to continue to talk about other
topics. Let me ask you about one of those bills in particular, and that's HB 1409, right. Which has to do with people in Baltimore City having their homes repossessed and sold if they are late or haven't paid their water bills, right? So it passed in the House, didn't pass in the Senate. But there are those in the city delegation or in the city government, including Mayor Pugh and Council President Young, who said they hadn't been consulted on it. They didn't think the bill was necessary. They thought it was superfluous and that it wasn't necessary, because that's not the policy of the city government to take people's homes for unpaid water bills. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think you should ask the 1,000 people a year whose home prior to this year have gone to tax sale for water-only bills. And the legislation, we've documented. I've been writing letters asking for information about their water affordability programs, a number of interactions. So it's actually not true at all. And in fact, we sat down during the legislative session and talked about not just this bill, but another piece of legislation, 1560, that was addressing the fact that there is no appeal dispute process when water bills are in error. And we know there are a ton of water bills in error. And so we actually agreed on legislation. That legislation passed the House. And again, this is legislation to correct this process where no one can appeal, to make sure that there's good customer service for water bills. And that bill passed out of the House, and then again it sat in the Senate. In terms of 1409,
but are you implying that that Senator Conway had something to do with it sitting and not passing in the Senate?
Well, I'm implying that it's the broader context of why we need change and fresh ideas and new approach. We have good things that will help our constituents. It gets out of the House, but then when it gets to the Senate, it sits there, and it's just, again, I want to be very clear. Mm-hmm. It's not just my bill. I'm talking about a culture around that only a few people in a back room or in a coffee house or wherever they make the decision about what is best.
Yeah, and well, very Senator often Conway, you talked about relationships. You talked about the importance of relationships.
Yes.
But then you also say that, you know, you're not even necessarily aware of whose bill this bill is or
no,
that
why
bill
would, is. Why would I be aware if you accuse me inconsistently? And it's more than one individual that said, I said, well, the bills, you're saying Delegate Washington is accusing me, and they asked me several times. I said, I don't know what Delegate Washington's bills are. You know how many bills I have to see?
But you
know
if you had a good relationship with another delegate, would you imagine that that delegate's bills would have a better chance of, for example, getting through your committee if
no.
relationships
it's,
are important?
It's the context.
What does it mean when you say
relationships
are important?
It's the context of the bill. Let me just say this. I don't know how Delegate Washington thinks that she's obviously going to fix the culture in the Senate. You know, I have a great deal of respect for President Miller, and we are consistently at odds. And he will tell you personally. The Democratic leadership will talk about the various bills, what's out there, what's going to pass, what's not going to pass. And you need the votes. First of all, you need the votes. But consistently, in many issues, they said this bill is a bad bill to be on the floor at this time. Okay. They say, well, maybe we shouldn't send a bill. I might put the bill on the voting list. They might say, well, we don't want the bill. Can you hold the bill, tell the bill, till we pass the budget? Because, you know, some bills are very controversial. It takes a lot of time on the floor. President Miller will tell you in himself. I am probably the only one that he said this can be combative at times. He said, I don't listen to him. And I don't, because it's not about President Miller in the context of the bill. His constituents might not like it, and he's absolutely correct. But it's not just about his constituents. It's about the constituents across the state of Maryland. So he said, sometime the leadership will make a decision not to send a bill to the floor. He said, Conway sends it anyway. I tell her, in committee, she sends it. I tell her, send it out of committee, she holds it. So I am not controlled by anybody in Annapolis, never have, never will be. So leaderships make the call, but it's always about doing the right thing for improving the quality of life for my constituents. Now, if the bill makes it off the floor, that's something totally different. But you cannot dictate to me, with all due respect to my president, which bills should or should not come to the floor. It is his job at that point, if it comes to the floor, based on the fact that he may not want it on the floor or his constituents might not want it on the floor because they are very controversial bills, then it is his job to get the votes to stop it.
All right. I am controlled by my director and engineer, yes. Luke Spicknall, who says that we got to take a little break and we will
all
come
right.
back and continue our conversation. Senator Joan Carter Conway has represented the 43rd District in the Maryland Senate since 1997. She's the chair of the Senate Education, Health, and Environmental Affairs Committee, the first African-American woman to be appointed chair of a Maryland Senate Standing Committee. Delegate Mary Washington has represented the same district, District 43, in the House of Delegates since 2010. She serves on a number of committees. She has a PhD in sociology from Johns Hopkins, and she's also a part-time faculty member at MICA, by the way. Both candidates are running in the June Democratic primary for the District 43 Senate seat. We will have more with Delegate Mary Washington and Senator Joan Carter Conway when we come back after a quick break. We are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. You can give us a call, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. To follow us on Twitter, @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow on our program, this month marks the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act, which Lyndon Johnson signed into law in 1968, just days after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Dr. Raymond Winbush, the director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University, will join me, along with Alicia Garza, the co-creator of the Black Lives Matter movement. She's going to tell us about one of her latest projects, the Black Futures Lab. Plus, jazzman Todd Marcus previews his quintet's Friday concert at Jubilee Arts in Sandtown, Winchester, which marks the third anniversary of the uprising that followed the death of Freddie Gray in 2015. That's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guests are the two candidates running for the Maryland Senate seat in District 43 here in Baltimore City. The district includes Charles Village, Waverly, Northwood, Coldstream, Homestead, Montebello, and Penn Lucy. Senator Joan Carter Conway is the incumbent. Delegate Mary Washington, who represents the district in the House, is challenging Senator Conway in the primary election that takes place in 2 months. You are welcome to be part of our conversation today with Senator Conway and Delegate Washington. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. We hope you'll follow us on Twitter, @MiddayWYPR. And we are streaming on the WYPR Facebook page. We have a comment on Facebook from PETA, who says we need new leadership, not the status quo. Mary will care more, not less. And we have a phone call from Ellen in Oakenshaw. She is a voter in the 43rd district. Ellen, welcome to the show. If you could make a brief comment, then we're going to ask Senator Conway to respond.
Sure. Hi, Dan. So I think most of us have gotten pretty cynical about government at this point. And I think we are blessed here in my district to have Mary Pat on the city council and to have Mary Washington representing us, and Maggie McIntosh, I would say, as well. But
and let me ask you to make a quick comment or a question.
We need some fresh blood in the House, in the state legislature, and Mary Washington has been extremely responsive, as has Mary Pat. Those are the two people who sort of keep the faith with.
Okay,
the
Ellen. Well, we appreciate the comment, and we have the gist. Senator Conway, how do you respond to a voter who says, you know, we need fresh blood? This is something that happens not only here in Maryland, but across the country.
This is happening across the country. And if you understand the process, and of course, people are definitely entitled to their opinion. If you ask Mary Pat, and I'm glad and elated that she gave those accolades to Mary Pat, when Mary Pat will tell anybody and everybody when she cannot get things done, how she gets her issues resolved is through State Senator Joan Carter Conway.
And Mary Washington, are there significant policy differences between you and Senator
Sure.
Conway?
And if I may, to the caller comment, and the job certainly is the 90 days during the year where we're passing legislation, we're advocating for the city. In the next 2 years, we will be developing a new formula. I have that background in demography and population statistics that will allow me to be a good partner in doing that sort of thing. But it's also what you do the 90 days. The other 9 months. And that is going to community meetings. That is when a light is out working with the city council person. That is when there's a library that is being designed in a way that against what the community wanted and sitting down with them, with the city, with the Department of General Services, attending those meetings. There's a church that wanted to do a rain garden. I sit on the board of the Parks and People Foundation, making those those connections. When I was working for Parks and People Foundation, developing after-school programs, there's a real opportunity in the 43rd District with the 55 communities, the four city council people, for us to really work together during those 9 months to really develop a budgetary, a legislative agenda, but also to act on those with partners in state and local government, as well as the philanthropic community. That is a significant difference that I see in terms of my approach. And then also, certainly when it comes to the environment, there are policy differences. When it comes to some various other things, there are policy differences. But it really is more about an approach and a willingness to be transparent, to bring fresh ideas, to be innovative and creative, and to take risks when it comes to really moving forward the agenda for our constituents.
Let's go back to the phones to another constituent. Dave in Northwood, welcome to Midday with Senator Conway and Delegate Washington.
Yes, thanks for taking my call, Tom. I've been living in Northwood a lot of my life, and the Northwood Shopping Plaza on Loch Raven and Havenwood has been in sort of a dim situation for many, many years, many decades. And I realize there are a lot of contention, the Morgan University development, the neighborhood, but it'd be nice if we could see this through sometime soon in our lifetimes. What can you do about that?
All right. Thanks for the call, Dave. Senator?
Yes. I guess I've been the forebearer and the front runner in this particular instance. Now, the shopping center is definitely going to be developed, and you're absolutely correct in saying that, you know, for probably the last 2 to 3 decades, you know, the community has been victimized by that shopping center, and we are definitely moving forward. And if you could remember the contention about building over the constituents and putting student housing in there, and I ultimately introduced a bill that actually prohibited it, and that was really the consummation and the start of the collaboration and negotiation. So to date, we're on target. There's a number of things that I think they're still looking for. Based on what Mr. Rembon said, they're still looking for a stabilizer in terms of the food store. But we are definitely moving on. There's money placed in the budget. The Barnes & Noble building is coming. Many of the stores there have been vacated. So we will be definitely moving on for the better.
Can I ask you a question on behalf of an emailer who wishes to remain anonymous, Senator? She says, or he says, in 2016, Senator Conway introduced a bill that prevented Morgan State student housing on the mixed-use Northwood Plaza renovation. That bill was vetoed, and the General Assembly didn't override it.
No, I opted not to override it. And let me tell you why I opted not to override it. And even with the portfolio and the financial portfolio of the developers over there, see, the Morgan State student housing was contemplated, and it is to be placed in Morgan View. It was never to be in a shopping center. So there was much objection to it. And then when they lowered it, I think it's American Campuses came in, and it was a 750 student building facility to house the students. So it did not work because it covered up all of the homeowners who had been living 20, 30, 40 years on Argonne. They redid the schematics of it, and we thought that it worked, and it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. But then the developer said it did not work in their financial portfolio, so they opted not to put it there. So the bill that was not vetoed, it was unnecessary to veto the bill. I could have overridden the governor's veto. I opted not to because everything that was in the bill had been collaborated and negotiated was also in the memorandum of understanding. Many individuals think that memorandum of understanding was only for Hill and Road. It was not. It was for Original Northwood, Hill and Road Improvement Association, New Northwood, and Stonewood Pentridge. Those are the most impacted and effective communities. Mm-hmm. So it was unnecessary for me to veto it, because not only what was in the bill, if I had vetoed it, I had gotten more information based on the collaboration and negotiation with those communities along with the developers. So if you read the memorandum of understanding, all of that and more is in the memorandum.
And Delia Washington, I mean, the senator brings up an interesting point. This is, seems to me, a great example of how legislation is, you know, making the sausage sometimes gets messy. It's not just this bill or that veto or this override or this memorandum of understanding. There is, politics is the business of compromise and consensus. What, for example, looking forward to 2019 in the General Assembly, what would be your priorities if you were the senator?
Well, certainly my priorities would be increasing funding, our funding formula, making sure that
funding formula
for public education, making sure that we have a proactive public safety programs that really uses best practices and has a public health approach, making sure that we engage our transportation system and reform it. But on this matter of the missed opportunity for the Northward Shopping Center, this is actually a perfect example of a difference. I was frankly surprised, and indeed, again, to use the word alarmed, that our state senator for the 43rd district would introduce legislation that would prohibit housing based on status, that somebody's status as a student or somebody's status of anything would outlaw them from being able to be in housing. And so I think that having that mixed-use housing and commercial property was a real opportunity to really have some of the best local businesses, some very creative things. Because of the delay caused by that legislation, and also, frankly, not my approach would have been to develop a coalition among, hey, what were the concerns of Hill and Road? What were the concerns and the wishes of the surrounding areas? And how could we negotiate it so we didn't miss an opportunity to really have the type of development that we have at 33rd and St. Paul, where we have student housing on the top, and then we have a cafe and commercial on the bottom that works very well. That's what the community wanted for that. But because of the delay, that is not possible. So there's going to be something much less.
First and foremost, there was a collaborative effort, and I would dare have to correct the delegate. There is not a delay. The delay is based on the fact of the developer. Those particular community association, there was collaboration, negotiation. There is no delay in the development. And additionally, it was not mixed-use housing. So I was at every meeting, you know, and I was at another meeting with one of the council representation, and they were offended because I said, you know, you weren't at the meetings. And they said to me, I was at two meetings. I said, I understand. I said, you don't have to be offended. I said, because I'm not talking about a meeting in 2016. I am talking about a charrette that was established in 94 and 95. And I am quite sure I have been to every meeting and you were not there. But there has been no delay based on legislation. And the legislation that was introduced was a collaborative effort. It was negotiated by the most effective communities. So the good delegate is mistaken, because I've been at every meeting and I understand who is being impacted, and the legislation was requested by those communities.
Let me see if we can get another phone call from some of your constituents. Gil in Homewood, welcome to Midday with Senator Conway and Delegate Washington.
Hello, it's actually Homeland. I want to commend, I'm Hispanic, and I want to commend Senator Conway for her aggressive passage of the Maryland in-state tuition bill. That bill was passed by the strength of her personality. She was pivotal to that bill. The other thing that she did that was very aggressive was allowing Hispanics who are undocumented to drive in Maryland, get insurance and drive and not be a safety hazard. She got an award from the Maryland Hispanic Chamber of Commerce for her efforts. She is loved by the Hispanic community. Right. She is a coalition builder.
Well, thank you, Gil.
I want to commend her for that.
I appreciate that comment. So, Delegate Washington, how do you respond to a voter like Gil who says, look, you know, there's a track record here that the senator has that's been very, very positive in many ways?
I don't discount that, and I'm glad that it's there. I also have a track record. The last week of session, when we were all so very busy, I stood alongside my colleagues in the Latino Caucus along with our Attorney General Frosch to call out the census that's requiring that we have citizenship status. And I stood alongside them. I'm a member, an associate member of the Latino Caucus. I stood on the floor to speak out in support of the Maryland Dream Act. So since my first year in office, I have been there. So I'm glad that we both agree that making sure that our constituents have access to public education and housing, regardless of their immigration status, I'm glad that we agree on that.
Mm-hmm. And Senator Conway, Frank and others on Facebook have asked a question that I've asked as well of Delegate Washington. I want to ask you the same thing. What's the difference between you two? What distinguishes you in your mind?
Let me just say, it's very little policy differences. You know, it's very, very little policy difference because it's about a quality of life issue here. And, you know, I don't have quite as much time as Delegate Washington does. But, you know, after session last year, I know I was at probably the delegates and I, with the exception of Delegate Washington, we're at about 20 or 25 meetings. So, you know, you always have certain individuals in your district. But the difference here is that the Kerwin Commission, in terms of the funding formula, comes to the chair of EHE. The lockbox bill that I actually introduced and was cross-filed by my delegate chairman, Maggie McIntosh, in the Appropriations Committee. So that is actually the bill that will bring the additional dollars, and that's the gambling revenues, and it's a phase-in of $125 million, $250 million the next year, $375 million. And probably by the time you actually reached the fourth year, we would be somewhere in the $525-550 million per year, which will be exclusively for education, public education, K-12. Higher ed is not in this particular bill. So we're requesting the support of the constituents across.
Because this will be on the referendum in November.
Yes, it will. So it's those types of things. I was there for Thornton Commission. I was there for the Bridge to Excellence, and it's always a disparity. And you know what? Some people said aggressive, assertive. You have to be assertive. I am assertive and will continue to be to improve the quality of life of just not Baltimore City, not just the 43rd District, but for the state of Maryland. Now, we know that consistently Baltimore City, in terms of public education, has been underfunded. You know, and we want to make it better. The first and primary reason why the tax base in Baltimore City is shrinking is because of the quality of education. When the children reach that age where they're to go to school, the parents move. The second reason is crime. Most people think it's a property tax. It's not the property tax. It's about the quality of education in Baltimore City public schools. Secondly is crime. Thirdly is the property tax. So you have to have an expansion in improving the quality of education so everybody has that same ability to have the education that we need so we can prosper. The other issue in terms of Thornton never considered poverty as an index. And it's not just about Baltimore City poverty. Poverty is in Western Maryland. Poverty is on the Eastern Shore. So there's a number of things that we will deal with in terms of Kerwin Commission, and those bills will come directly to
Mm-hmm. And Delegate Washington, we're going to give you the last word because we're out of time here. But, for example, when it comes to this so-called lockbox idea, your bill proposed that it be a statutory thing, be part of Maryland law rather than part of the Maryland Constitution.
Right.
Why did you think that was a better idea?
Well, the voters had already voted twice already to say that casino gaming revenue should go to education. Additionally, the legislation as proposed would give that $500 million immediately. It would go into the budget next year rather than phasing it in. And again, this is part of doing legislation that focuses on what is best for our constituents. You know, with all due respect, Maryland has a governor. Baltimore City has a mayor. 43rd District needs a senator that is focused solely and will always have time for their concerns, always have time, and that there's no other competing forces. I will be the Senator 43rd District, engaging with them on a day-to-day basis during those 9 months to address gun control, to address realigning state and local housing priorities, to make sure that we have housing needs for our young people, to make sure that the trees and the roads, the decline that has happened over the 20 years under this leadership, does no longer happen, that we won't stand for it going forward.
That is all the time we have, and I am very grateful to both of you for coming to addressing the issues and speaking to the voters. Thank you very much, and we will continue to follow this race as the campaign continues.
Thank you.
Delegate Mary Washington has represented District 43 in the House of Delegates since 2010. Senator Joan Carter Conway has represented the district in the state Senate since 1997. They are both on the ballot for the Senate seat in the 43rd District. The first day of early voting is in 51 days on June 14th. We're going to take a quick break. When we return, I'll ask Josh Kurtz of Maryland Matters to weigh in about a few other prominent races in the Maryland House and Senate. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Primary day in Maryland is in 2 months and 2 days. Early voting, as I just mentioned, begins on June 14th. So if you've just joined us, we've heard from Senator Conway and Delegate Washington, who are running against each other in the Senate race in District 43. Now we're going to turn our attention to a few other races. Josh Kurtz is my guest. He's the editor and co-founder of Maryland Matters and a longtime observer of Maryland government and politics. He joins me now on the line from Washington. Hey, Josh, how you doing?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Doing great, thanks. And listeners, if you have questions for Josh Kurtz, who really does know an awful lot about Maryland politics, why don't you jump in? 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org. You can always follow us on Twitter @MiddayWYPR. If you want to follow me on Twitter, @TomHallWYPR. So, Josh, let's start first with, we'll get to the races in a second, but there's a new poll just released today by Goucher College in the governor's race. And it shows that Governor Larry Hogan still enjoys a very high approval rating, some 68-70% or so. What do you read into the fact that this governor, whomever his Democratic opponent in the primary is or in the election is going to be, what do you read about the solidity of his popularity as we speak at this juncture in the primary campaign?
Well, these numbers have been really consistent for a while, and so Democrats are kind of running out of time to really chip away at them. I mean, he's been in the high 60s, low 70s for a couple of years now, and that's really formidable, and those are numbers that any politician would envy. The one thing I think the Democrats are hanging on to in this poll is that in matchups with all seven of their contenders, Governor Hogan is still below 50%. He has leads of anywhere from 13 to 20 points, which are significant without a doubt, but 50% is kind of considered the magic figure that you really want to be over if you're an incumbent running for re-election.
Yeah, against Rashern Baker in this poll, the executive county executive of Prince George's County, he's at 44 to Mr. Baker's 31, but there's a 22% undecided chunk in that electorate. Against Ben Jealous, the former head of the NAACP, he's also at 44% against 31%. And Kevin Kamenetz, he's 45 against Kamenetz's 28%. Kamenetz, of course, the county executive in Baltimore County. So there still is a chunk of the electorate, 20-25% or so, that are undecided. Will they be able to make the case in the primary, which, as we've been mentioning, is 50-some days away?
Well, you know, at this point, the Democrats have to make the case against one another for the next 2 months. And, you know, that's going to be kind of interesting and a challenge for these folks because they don't really disagree on very much. So, you know, there are going to be kind of issues of style, background, substance, you know, geography, gender, ideology, race, they all come into play. But, you know, there isn't a lot of difference between these candidates that we've seen so far.
And, of course, we will continue our conversations with all of the people running in the Democratic primary for governor. Mr. Kamenetz will be my guest on Friday, and Mr. Baker will be my guest a week from Friday. Let's talk about the Senate seat that's currently held by Nathaniel Oakes, who is pled guilty in a corruption case. And there's a big kerfuffle about whether or not Mr. Oakes will appear on the ballot in the 41st District. The ballots, I guess, were to have been printed yesterday, and a judge in Anne Arundel County just a couple of days ago said that, yes, he had to appear on the ballot. He's pled guilty. He's not going to serve whether or not anybody votes for him. What's going on with that?
Well, there are a few different things happening. former Senator Oaks is now trying to get himself off the ballot. He withdrew his voter registration just yesterday, which would disqualify him from appearing on the ballot. And I should add, he's running both. He's on the ballot now for both the state Senate seat and for a seat on the Democratic Central Committee. But as you mentioned, the ballot is probably now in the process of being printed. So is the fact that the former senator has now withdrawn his voter registration enough to get him off the ballot? Is there enough time? I mean, I think that's something wiser people and judges are going to have to figure out very quickly.
You heard, I think, part of our conversation that we just had earlier in the show with Delegate Mary Washington running against a firmly entrenched incumbent who's been in the Senate for 21 years. That is not the only race in which a junior legislator is challenging a more senior senator trying to move from the House to the Senate. What are the other two that you've got your eye on in particular, and what do you think this means for the Democratic Party?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, there are two really fascinating races, additional races in the city right now. One has, in the 45th District, has first-term delegate Corey McRae challenging State Senator Nathaniel McFadden, who's been there for a long time. And in the 40th District, you have first-term delegate Antonio Hayes challenging Senator Barbara Robinson. And these are really kind of fascinating. They're generational battles. They're ideological battles. The challengers are distinctly to the left of the incumbents. And I think, you know, there are sort of generational battles being fought all over the state and indeed really all over the country on the Democratic side when you think about it. And I think these races largely reflect that. The race you just spotlighted between Senator Carter, Joan Carter Conway, and Delegate Washington is a little different. There is an age gap, but and there is a bit of an ideology gap. It isn't as pronounced as in the other two primaries. I think there's sort of, you know, some grudges and personality things going on in that race that we don't see in the others. But they're all fascinating and you know, bear a lot of watching.
Nine Democratic state senators have announced that they are leaving because they're either running for something else or they are retiring.
Right.
Some 40 people in the House of Delegates will leave the House out of 141 members in the lower house. There is going to be a momentous change of personnel in the House and the Senate in January of 2019 when they reconvene.
There is. There was also a pretty momentous change in personnel in the House this last time around after the 2014 election. I think more than a third of the House members were new. The Senate thing is really fascinating to me because it looks like all the change is going to happen on the Democratic side. Democrats currently have a 33-14 advantage. At this point, I don't think any Republican senator is in trouble, but we have nine leaving plus the Oaks vacancy, so that's really 10 right there. We have about a half dozen Democratic senators who are vulnerable in the primary in June, and then three who are vulnerable in the general election. So there could be tremendous turnover in the Democratic caucus and in the Senate, unlike anything I can recall seeing.
Is it possible that the Republicans could gain some ground in the Senate if they flipped, for example, I think it's five seats?
Right.
They would have a veto-proof representation in the Senate. They wouldn't have a majority, but they would have enough to stop any vetoes.
Right. That's the magic number for Republicans, and they're working hard at it. I would say they're really sort of realistically targeting six Democratic Senate seats, and it's easy to see them picking off two or three. I think if this remains a pretty good Democratic year nationally, which is certainly shaping up to look to be that way right now, it might be harder for the Republicans to get the full five Senate seats they need, but you know, they're working hard at it for sure.
Well, you know, in 2016, we heard it was a Democratic year for president as well,
right.
And we know how that worked out. So.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Josh, I appreciate your reporting. Maryland Matters is a terrific, terrific website, a very, very welcome addition to the political reporting scene here in Maryland. So thank you so much, and we will be back in touch as all of these races continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom.
Josh Kurtz is the co-founder and editor of MarylandMatters.org. It's a great website about Maryland government and politics. You should check it out. We've got a link to it, as well as to the campaign websites of Senator Joan Carter Conway and Delegate Mary Washington. They were my guests earlier in the show at WIPR.org/midday. As I keep harping on, early voting in the June primary begins in 51 days. Coming right up. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Dr. Ray Winbush of Morgan State University and Alicia Garza, co-creator of the Black Lives Matter movement, will be my guests. We're going to talk about the unfinished work of the 1968 Fair Housing Act, which was signed into law by President Johnson 50 years ago this month, and the Black Futures Lab, an initiative to understand and advocate for African Americans. Plus, Todd Marcus, a great jazz man, is going to come and give us a preview of his show at Jubilee Arts in Sandtown, Winchester this weekend. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. They serve coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hall. Aaron Henkins up at the top of the hour. Stay with us. Have a great day.